Can you picture the first goal before the ball's even bounced? You might have the touch. When the weather's wet, can you feel who'll triumph? You've got the power. Can you read the footy future in the mullet of a full forward? Then you too might be harnessing the power of the touch. Got the touch? Download the Tab Touch app today.
You win some, you lose more. For free and confidential support, call 1800 858 858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.
Hello and welcome to Hoop 7's Basketball Hustle. And what an NBL Championship Series we're now in the middle of. All of a sudden, after one of the most incredible finishes to a game we'll ever see, one of the best shots we'll ever see in the NBL, the Tasmania Jack Jumpers. After last week, I asked my co-host Cody Ellis if we would even have more games to talk about this week. All of a sudden, they're one game away from what would be an incredible NBL Championship. But we've still got Melbourne United for them, standing in the way, trying to send it to a Game 5 back in Melbourne. So that's a lot for us to get through on its own. We'll dive into a few other things happening across the NBL world as well. But the NBL Championship Series will be our focus this week. We're here, as always, thanks to Hoop 7 and Tab Touch. And I'm once again delighted to be joined by the former South East Melbourne Phoenix head coach, Simon Mitchell. Simon, good to be with you again.
Yeah, great to be back on your show, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries at all. Always fascinating to pick your brain. And in the middle of a championship series, I can't wait to see what you're seeing between the Jack Jumpers and Melbourne United. But first of all, we haven't caught up for a little while. Cody's been hogging the hosting chair. What's the last 3 or 4 weeks been like for you?
Same as what it was every week. Just really busy running the kids around their hoops and trying to stay in touch with the grand final. I actually have only seen one game live so far. I've had to miss the other two and watch them on replay. And I'm looking forward to the start of the AFL season too. At some stage, Collingwood, when they decide to turn up, will be when the AFL season starts for me. So. it's a good time of year. Obviously, we had the WNBL finals, and we've got an amazing grand final series underway right here that has been enthralling, and it's been great watching the games back over and over, trying to see the changes in strategies during the course of the game, and see who's winning those battles.
Yeah, nice of Collingwood to wait until the NBL season's finished for them to start turning up.
That's right. They're waiting on the NBL to finish.
All right. So a lot of our show, obviously, this week will be surrounding what we've seen so far, especially in Game 2 and Game 3 of this Championship Series, and also looking ahead to Game 4. And I'll leave it to the end of the show to let you tell us if you think it'll be done in Game 4 on Thursday night in Hobart or if we'll be going to a Game 5 back in Melbourne. But let's start with the end of Game 3. It's one of the most incredible finishes to an NBL game in of any sort, but especially a grand final game. So much we could get through. I mean, some of those big shots in the last 3 or 4 minutes were unbelievable, but what everyone was talking about at the end was the last 8 seconds. I want to get your thoughts first of all. What went through your mind when you saw that inbounds pass from, of all people, Matthew Dellavedova, that just sailed completely over Chris Golding's head, who ended up out of bounds and was going out of bounds before Milton Doyle saved it? What did you make of what you saw with that?
Yeah, I guess sometimes my immediate thought was they stayed with a small ball for that possession. And then you've kind of got some players that are maybe out of position and not used to running the routes that you normally would in that execution. And I guess in this circumstance, I'm looking at Ian Clark, playing the four man in that set and looking a little bit lost and not finding himself free. But yeah, I thought, people are going to look at Dally on that one and question the pass. Oh, I thought there has to be some responsibility put on Shaili in that circumstance as well. He sets a screen for Chris. Sean McDonald does a great job of getting over the screen. Milton Doyle is defending the inbounds, helps out on Chris, takes that away. Now, Shaili had a pretty easy opportunity just to put a little bit of weight on Jordan Crawford and then just put a target hand up and then just receive the ball and get fouled.
Yeah.
He didn't put that weight on him and he let Crawford go and deny that spot that he was leading into. So I thought the execution there was a little bit poor. And then it was a little bit of hair on fire moment. Like, okay, well, what do we do now? Well, that's the initial pass, and it's supposed to go to Chris if he's open. But if he's not open, then we're going to Illy. Neither of them open. And then there was no action after that. And it's easy to point the finger at Daly. I think if you're going to throw the ball anywhere on the floor, he's probably chosen the best area, in the sense that there's a crowd there. You could probably get battered out of bounds and you get yourself another 5 seconds. It was close to the sideline. You know, Chris looked like he tried to gather a call from get a whistle, but it's hard, much harder to get a whistle in front of the opposition bench than in your own.
Yes.
Especially when the calls of hay are not there. So, yeah, it was an unfortunate situation that Melbourne United found themselves in, but all the credit for Tassie. They took away the action, and a remarkable play there by Milton Doyle and then obviously Jack Bay. So some of the most exciting basketball I've ever been privy to watching.
Yeah. Cody mentioned a fascinating point that I hadn't thought of to me the other day. The pass reminded him of what we saw from Kyle Adnan being thrown in the deep end late in that game against Melbourne as well. I think it was it game one? Game one of that series. I mean, remarkable how similar those two sidebound plays ended up being.
Yeah, no, the second one, obviously the first one Kyle had was the deep one up in the backcourt, and then the second one was, the turnover on that. And look, that 5 second count goes a little quicker in your head when the game's on the line. And perhaps Daly had a few more moments to, you know, reconsider another option, but just watching the playback, there was no other option.
Yeah.
It was really just, there was guys sort of scratching their head going, well, do you go, do I go, what do we do here? So again, I go back to, you know, they had their small ball outfit out there, guys playing out of their usual position, the execution wasn't quite on point, and that's what you get left with.
Yeah. I'll get your thoughts on that small ball later on as well. Milton Doyle saving the ball. Watching it live, I put my hands to my head wondering, what the hell are you doing? It ended up working out great, but he spoke after the game and his explanation made a lot of sense, and all of a sudden I understood exactly why he did it, because it didn't look like there was any chance that Sean McDonald had touched the ball, but he didn't want to leave that decision in the hands of the referees because you can understand this, he couldn't trust them to make the right decision, so he didn't want the game decided if they thought it was a Tasmania ball or not. So when he dived to save the ball, in hindsight, he clearly did the right thing. What did you think of the time when you saw that?
I hadn't heard that explanation, and that might be just a subtle jab. He's a gentleman who obviously had some power trouble during the course of the game, and a few of those he may have thought were dubious or a little bit over-enthusiastic with maybe an unsportsmanlike. So maybe it's his very gentlemanly way of, because he is a lovely gentleman, a very gentlemanly way of having a jab. I don't think there was any sort of dispute, and in the last, obviously, at the end of the game, they will go to a video of any contentious out-of-bounds play. Yeah. So I think it was just an instinctive play by him. You know, he's a long-rangey, high IQ player. He had time. You know, time moves a little slower for a guy who's that smart. And you know, it was a little bit instinctive. But it was a huge play, and I actually like the play. I don't think you let the balls sail out of bounds in that situation, because then you get Melbourne United setting up defensively. They caught Melbourne unawares in transition, and whilst Melbourne put a lot of pressure and heat on that shot by Jack, I think over, if you're doing percentages, I think if they take the side ball out full court there, they had no timeouts to advance the ball, they're not going to get themselves a real great shot, and they probably got the best shot they were going to get in that situation.
Yeah, I completely agree, because if they stop the play, I think while it might have helped them set up a play, I think it helps Melbourne even more to be able to set up their defense. So I completely agree. It turned out perfectly for them. It also ended up in the perfect man's hands. I kind of feel like if Jack McVay tried to drive to the basket or get inside the paint, he's going to end up less likely to make the shot than he was likely to make a half-court shot. I mean, he's the exact character of a person that he's going to make a half-court shot to win a championship game, isn't he? I mean, that's just it. It's just his makeup.
He's got that mentality. Yeah. He's a guy who visualises a lot. He talks about that. Talks about the way he prepares himself. And, you know, he's seen himself making just about every shot imaginable for game winners in his mind. And, you know, the guys who make big shots generally are those guys that imagine those situations, you know, endlessly. And, you know, he's a guy that clearly wanted that moment and had envisioned it for himself in the past. And yeah, what an amazing shot. The greatest shot I've seen in NBL history. Yeah, it really is. And you might be right. You can kind of time Jack on with a sundial at times. Mm. He's not the most fleet of foot athlete out there in the NBL. So whilst he shot it with 3 seconds to go, I reckon he moved 5 seconds from half court to get to the rim. So he's not the quickest of athletes out there. So, yeah, that was a good look for him. He wanted it and he made it, and he'll become a thing of legend in Tasmanian basketball.
Yeah. One of my questions was going to be, where does it rate in shots in NBL history? And I mean, you've just answered that for me, but off the top of my head, the Akeni Ibekwe game winner to win a championship for New Zealand has to be right up there, just because that actually clinched the championship. And I remember covering that game and I just sat there shaking my head. What I was seeing was that was an incredible turnaround jumper that he took. So that was a huge shot. I mean, you've had some big ones in regular season games. I mean, you go back to last season, Tyler Harvey, very similar to this shot from Jack against the New Zealand Breakers. But, you know, that's a regular season game and it was on a team that won, what, 3 games for the season. So it didn't mean a lot in the big scheme of things. You go back to Cedric Jackson's three-quarter shot for the Breakers against the Wildcats, which happened right in front of me. I was about 2 metres away from him as it happened. That was an incredible shot. But again, that wasn't to win. It wasn't in a championship series. So, I mean, just because of the magnitude of the moment, and also the difficulty of the shot and everything that went into it, are you pretty comfortable to say it's the best shot we've seen in NBL history?
Yeah, I think for what it is, it is. It's the most important great shot that I've ever seen. Mm. And you know, you think of great moments like, you know, the greatest block shot you've ever seen. You mm-hmm. think of the Bam Adebayo or the LeBron James one off the window mm-hmm. in the championship series. Like, those are captivate and yep. become a legend. Now, there's maybe 2-game regular season.
Talk about blocks. Sean Redditch on CJ Bruton to send that series that season for the Wildcats and the Breakers to game 3 was a pretty memorable moment too.
Yeah, yeah. And so there's these moments that are captured all throughout regular seasons and pre-seasons and that are just as great, if not greater. Mm-hmm. But it's the moment and getting it done in the moment. And, you know, I remember Nigel Purchase playing in a full court John Elway deep ball against Brisbane up at Boondall one time. Mm-hmm. And that was like, yeah, that's fluky, you would think. Yeah. But I actually did a basketball clinic with Nigel the next week at Greenhills Primary School, which was, you know, where he grew up, mm-hmm. actually. And all the kids, they'd been watching the game on Channel 7. They're telling, oh, can you do it again? Can you do it again? And he went back and replicated the shot and actually nailed it. So that's the only almost as great shot that I can think of off the top of my head. You know, the Ibekwe was a relatively regulation sort of mid-range jumper. Well, when I say regulation, it won a championship. Yes. And that's where the greatness in that shot comes from. If that happens, you know, 3 minutes into the first quarter of round 3, bottom of the table clash, no one cares about it.
Yeah, for sure.
This is unbelievable. No matter what, in any circumstances, it's a great shot. But given the magnitude of the moment, it is one of the, if not the greatest moment in NBL history.
Mm. Especially if they win a championship. I mean, that is going to be replayed for the rest of our lives if they end up winning a championship because of that winner. You touched on this as well with Jack. I mean, I've spoken to him a lot over the years, and he's talked about how he talks to himself in the mirror about making big shots and wanting to be a big shot player. He's talked about how he writes down the shots he wants to make and that he makes the big shots and that's what he's made for. He goes out and shoots and he talks to himself. He commentates himself about the moments that he's shooting in and he's shooting to win a championship. And how much do you think it helps that he's got that mindset that he wants to be in that moment and he's put himself in that position, you know, in front of nobody, but he's put himself in that position to prepare himself for this moment. Do you think that helps when you actually do get in the moment for real?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's that want to be in that moment. Mm. He's talked that moment into existence and he's put himself in that position to be that man. And without all that preparation, then he's not doing that. And obviously, we've seen him hit big shots before. It's not the first time.
It's his second game winner just of this season.
Yeah, that's right. You know, he had one earlier in the – or might have been at the end of last year. I can't remember. But, he had that big shot.
No, it was earlier this season for sure.
Yeah, yeah. No, he had that one this year, and you know, and he talked about it after that game as well. You know, he visualises those moments, and he prepared for it. You know, you go through. We could watch the tape back. If you watch that tape back, there'll be moments where there's other players that you think, oh, maybe they had an opportunity there to make a big play, and they didn't take it. Yeah, Jack's not going to be the guy who shies away from that. And neither's Milton Doyle, who obviously had the setup.
Yep.
Basket a couple of possessions earlier. So, and Daly in the isolation play against Majuk Denk. Yes. They're guys who are willing to take on the moment. And we know Chris Golding's that player also. So, yeah, that's what's made this a really special series, is that we've got great players making great plays.
That emotion straight after the game with Jack's interview with John Casey was incredible as well. I mean, you could tell he was caught up in the moment. That was an incredible moment, because he didn't know what to say, and but you could see the emotion and just how much it meant.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I don't know Jack.
Yeah.
I think I've met him once, and it was like I was with someone that he knew, and he sat away. And he seemed like a different character, though.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
he's his own man. He's marching to the beat of his own drum, and that's a great thing. You love to have those blokes, and they see the world and the game a little bit differently, and they can lighten moments. But he's G'd himself up after the game. Come on, one more. I was sitting on the couch laughing, but I was laughing just how appreciative I was the moment that he was experiencing there, and he would have been going wild with his teammates afterwards. Yeah. Just, we got one more, and that's the focus of Tassie. You can see it's the focus. Scott Roth said something, and we haven't done anything because everyone's pumping up, their success in their career so far, in their history so far, and he's like, we haven't done anything. So they've got lofty standards, lofty goals, and you can see it's permeating through the group, and you can see that in Jack in that post-game interview, and I think that's why I got the laughter going. I was just like, yeah, these players are on. And that's one of the reasons we're backing for the championship. I just feel like they're a team that has tremendous self-belief, and we've seen it all season. They haven't been great all year. Let's be honest. There was times where they really looked like they could miss the playoffs.
Yeah.
But their last few weeks, and we know they're a team that don't defeat themselves. They hang in games. They've been down most of the series. They seem to find a way to get their noses in front in important moments. They have that self-belief. And their body language is just amazing to me.
Yep.
They will not defeat themselves. And they're certainly a product of their coach. I think Scott Ross is going to take a lot of the credit for the team he's not just put together, but the way that they behave and the focus that they carry and the never-say-die attitude that they always exhibit.
Mm. No, absolutely. All right, so there's plenty more around that championship series for us to get through. We'll dissect the series a little bit more once we come back from this first break, and then I'll get your Game 4 and potentially Game 5 predictions to close the show. But before we take this first break, there's been a lot happening since we last spoke, Simon. So a few things I want to get your quick thoughts on. We haven't had a chance to talk about not only Brian Gorgeon back at the Sydney Kings, but also the MVP and the championship-winning captain Xavier Cooks now back at the Sydney Kings. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are Brian Gorgian's a pretty good coach, and Xavier Cooks is a pretty good basketball player. I think the Sydney Kings have done pretty well this offseason. That's one heck of a bounce back after this corny season. So you get the most successful NBL coach of all time and currently the best local player available for the NBL. Yeah, they're kicking goals. Chris Pongrass is, as usual, having wonderful off-seasons and doing great things for Sydney basketball.
Also big news of the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, Simon, and Alan Williams, who you might remember going back to halfway through the season when we did our mid-season predictions and we were picking our MVP, and I had him as my MVP at that point because of how impactful he was, and Bryce hadn't quite strung together as long of being Bryce as he had and would end up being. But what's your reaction to Big Sauce no longer being at the Phoenix for next season? And following on from a discussion I had with Cody last week, could you see him signing somewhere else in the NBL?
Well, absolutely. I hope we do see Alan Williams in the NBL. I think he's endeared himself, not just to his teammates and the people of the Southeast Melbourne, but for the league in general. I think his professionalism, he's a fun person, he's got a wonderful personality, and I think that's shone through in his commentary and also his appearances on TV. And I think he's got himself a bit of a backing basketball public there. So from the standpoint of would I like to see him back in the league? Absolutely. He's a wonderful chap, and from a personal standpoint, I would definitely love to see him back in the NBL. I think it's those sort of characters that make our league special. In regards to South East Melbourne and his departure, look, I think this might be a situation. He's missed a lot of basketball, and as you said, you know, he was an MVP caliber player at the beginning of the season, and but injuries have played their toll. And Southeast have had, as we know, a lot of bad luck, particularly this year. It was just diabolical. And I'm going to guess that the goal of the off season, or one of the number one goals for Southeast, is putting a roster together that can stay on the floor. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of Allen's knee, but I dare say that there would have been a little bit of an assessment from the medical staff and the coaching staff, and to weigh up any risks and whether or not Southeast Melbourne would be prepared to take those risks on of bringing Allen in back again next year. Now, again, not privy to those discussions, so I'm speculating.
Yes.
But I'm going to guess that Southeast need a clean bill of health, and if there's any sort of leftover or doubt or risk or added risk to bringing Allen back, then they've probably said, no, we need to go in a different direction on those terms. It's certainly not productivity, and he's a wonderful player. And, yeah, as I said, I do hope we get to see Allen back in the league, because he's not just a great player, but a great character.
Yes, absolutely. One other player move we've seen already, even before free agency has started, was Sam Menenga leaving the Taipans to go home to the New Zealand Breakers. And I want to get your thoughts, because it's an incredible show of faith from the Breakers in what they think of him, because they paid out his second season of his contract at the Taipans, and they have to pay him for this year. So that shows just how highly they think of him. As a player, being Sam, that must be a great feeling, knowing that the club you're going to just thinks that much of you.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's certainly, I'm not 100% across the terms of the release. I'd be very surprised if they're paying a full year to Cairns for that. I think there might be a smaller transfer fee.
Yep.
But New Zealand's done a very good job in the background over the years of bringing their New Zealand players home. I know from South East Melbourne, you know, we lost Zaire Liapo, who was contracted. You know, we took the chance on Yanni Wetzel. He wound up back in New Zealand. So, you know, these are also kids that have been in the college system for 4 years. Like Sam Menenga, they come back, they play NBL, they're used to that, being away from home, but all of a sudden being close to home, maybe the urge is to, okay, well, yeah, I really would like to get home. But yeah, no, the Taipans have taken full advantage of that and got themselves in a very, very good player in Sam Menenga with tremendous potential.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he had a rollercoaster season, but at best, what we saw from him is a really high-quality player in that four spot. Before we take our first break, we've seen the WNBL Championship wrap up now a bit over a week ago as well, Simon, and this was a fascinating three-game series as well, and I'm sure the Perth Lynx are kicking themselves for not closing it out at home, but, gee, I mean, when you see what the Southside Flyers did in that Game 3 back in Melbourne, and they were too good. I mean, Lauren Jackson, Leilani Mitchell, Beck Cole, Mercedes Russell, who won the Grand Final MVP, Carly Ernst backing up those two bigs and comes out and hits three threes in about 2 minutes to blow the game wide open. What did you make of what we saw from the end of the WNBL NBL season?
Yeah, it was a fairly dominant performance by Southside in Game 3 in front of their home crowd. You know, the veteran players turned up. Leilani Mitchell's performance, I thought, was outstanding. Obviously, Lauren Jackson's performance in the back end of the season has been pretty strong. Mercedes Russell was wonderful throughout the season, and certainly the back end of the season especially. I thought she was pretty unlucky to not get a nod into the MVP consideration. I think they take their votes after, you know, with about 3 weeks to go on the season. So I think she had a few BOGs at the back end there that might have helped put her in the running. But yeah, look, it was a bit of a Bradbury effort too, to be honest. Perth lost back to the last minute of play was quite, I don't know, there should have been some Benny Hill music in the background, I think. Lauren Jackson's car in sending Bailey, you know, 90 feet to go shoot free throws to put them up, which was diabolical play. but then Maley was diabolical from the line.
Yes.
And then Southside get the ball back and Mercedes Russell punts it out of bounds. And then
Maley has another chance.
And then we get the Maley missed layup. And then the offensive rebound. Like it was a rough finish.
Mm.
But people seem to like close finishes regardless yes. of the standard of play sometimes. Yeah. So it certainly was exciting. I thought that must have been extraordinarily damaging for the Perth Lynx players to be so close on their own court. They've had to do some travel during the playoffs, obviously playing Townsville in round one. So that travel to Townsville, back to Perth, over to Melbourne, back to Perth, and then to come back to Melbourne again. And with the scars of game two, it was always going to be difficult. But you've got to tip your hat to the performance of Southside. You know, veteran players made veteran plays, and everybody came to the party, and poor Alex Maley put in another shocker. And yeah, they looked damaged from game two, Perth, to me. But all the credit needs to go to Southside.
Yeah, absolutely. Just touching on that from a Lynx perspective, how do you try to now deal with that over the off season and come back next season? Because it's remarkable how similar it was to what happened to them 2 years ago in the grand final series as well. I know a lot of the players aren't the same, but to get so close to winning a championship in two out of the last 3 years from winning that game two on your home floor, how do you put that behind you now and try to bounce back next year?
Look, it can be difficult. You know, from a mental standpoint, there's going to be some scarring there for the players, and they need to overcome that. But they keep pretty heavy schedules in the off season with their NBL ones and their 3-on-3s and their Opals games. There's going to be plenty of distractions that they'll need their attention, and so hopefully that helps put the game or the series behind them. But at the same time, I think, the coaching staff will need to look at the way they go about things. Mm-hmm. This is a team that can go out and score heavy, and they shoot the ball a lot, and they shoot the ball early. And if that shot's not going down, they're quite a vulnerable basketball team.
Yep.
So maybe they need to add a few more elements to their game as well to be a championship team. You know, when the ball's dropping, they're a very, very good basketball team. And as we saw in game three, if those shots aren't dropping, then they can be very ordinary as well.
Yes, yep, absolutely. All right, plenty of time to wait to see how that unfolds. But more immediately, Simon, we need to break down this championship series in the NBL a bit more. So let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll dissect what we've been seeing.
Can you picture the first goal before the ball has even bounced? Can you read the footy future in the mullet of a full forward? You've got the touch. Got the touch? Download the Tab Touch app today.
You win some, you lose more.
All right, Simon, I'm fascinated to let you put your analysing cap on and your coaching hat on to look through what we've seen so far in this championship series. Let's start with how you were feeling after game one, because that was a dominant performance from Melbourne United. It's the first time we've seen the Jack Jumpers blown out this whole season, and it's their biggest loss of the season. After game one, did you think it was Melbourne that was too good in this series, or did you still have some hope that the Jack Jumpers could find a way back into it?
No, I think just historically, if you go through five game series, seven game series, even a three game series, through NBA or NBL history, you'll see lots of blowouts and then a quick turnaround and the opposite result happened. So I think the Jack Jumpers, whilst not being the greatest team all season long, have certainly earned the right and should have earned our respect as a basketballing public for us to think this was an anomaly. You know, they don't get beat by large margins virtually ever. So the fact that it happened in a big game, and you don't sort of gloss over it, but you also say, well, no, hang on. History's going to tell us that, you know, they're made of some pretty good stuff, the Jack Jumpers. They're very well led, and I wouldn't be just packing it up just yet if I'm them. And I have the Tassie Jack Jumpers for the series, so maybe I was just holding on to my own tips on that one. But I wasn't too worried, but I was certainly extremely impressed by Melbourne United in that game. Their shooting performance was excellent, led obviously by Chris Golding, and JLA was dominating inside. And they had performances across the board in that game. So there was a little bit to be concerned about, but at the same time, I think the Jack Jumpers have should have earned our respect by now, in the sense that we should expect them to come back strong.
No, absolutely. What about by the, I think it was 3 minutes into the second half of game two down in Hobart, and Melbourne had just come out and hit the first 11 points of the third quarter. They were leading 55-40. What was going through your mind by that stage?
So maybe my concerns were starting to starting to build just at this point, and Melbourne were looking really strong. But then, you know, I think it was the third quarter, wasn't it, when McVay stood up and just put a little bit of a mini run together himself, and Sean McDonald was playing really well as well. And they made that comeback halfway through the third quarter pretty quick, but it was on the back of McVay. I know he had a pretty deep three, and then he backed Ali down in the post and found Marcus Lee for a bucket and one, and then McVay was fouled off the ball and got to the free throw line. So it was McVay that cut loose a little bit, and you know Melbourne were doubling him early in the post, which I thought that you'd give Travers a chance to guard him one out, but straight off the bat Melbourne were doubling him on as soon as the ball hit the floor, and even in the wide post. As soon as he started backing down, they send the double. They got themselves in a little bit of mischief there too, Melbourne, with that. And that's how Jordan Crawford got going early with some wide open looks in the first quarter of that game. But yeah, then there was single coverage in that third quarter, and McVay took advantage of it. And yeah, he's been special.
Yes, yes. The last 17 minutes of that game were incredible. So after Melbourne was leading by 15 points, and they well and truly looked on track to be taking a 2-0 lead in this series. From that moment, the last 17 minutes, the Jack Jumpers outscored them 42-22. So Melbourne scored 22 points in that last 17 minutes of the game. They shot 7 of 28 over that period. They had 5 turnovers as well. What did you see that changed? How did Tasmania completely take Melbourne out of their offensive groove?
Yeah, well, I think we saw a little bit less of JLA as being a focal point, obviously. And, I think Melbourne made some poor decisions. I think there was a – Daly had a reverse layup there at one stage that maybe should have been a kick out for a catch-and-shoot three. Ili may have forced the couple of baskets in transition. Now, he made a couple as well. Yep. So I thought he forced the pace a little bit where maybe Melbourne could have maybe looked to get the ball in Chris's hands at some stage. And they found a little bit of an action that was working for them, Tassie. The McVay and Magne 4-5 pick and roll, they got a couple of back-to-back baskets out of that. The Jackies just found some things that were winning and just kept pressing. And I just thought the coaching job by Scott Roth was just phenomenal. Jordan Crawford started the game white hot and then virtually set out the second half with the preference going to Sean McDonald, who got himself hot and was making plays. And so just that trust. And what I love, and I kind of touched upon it earlier, just the body language and the one-mindedness of the Tassie Jack Jumpers is you don't see frustration. Jordan Crawford playing, the house down, he struggled in game one, comes out red hot, goes to the bench, barely comes back in, but no body language issues. Right. Whereas you can start to see a little bit of frustration. Melbourne United being very, very aggressive with the referees. Daly wants a review on just about every call. JLA looking frustrated at times. He's going to the bench a lot. There seems to be a bit of disconnect right now at this moment with JLA. And, the differences in the way that the two teams are carrying themselves, I just think it favours Tassie a little bit right now. Melbourne need to get themselves back in a groove, not worry about referees. I know they're having success with the complaining. It seems to be that whenever they do complain, that there's a call getting made up for them. But I think they just need to focus on what they need to focus on, and that's their execution. And making sure that the ball is getting in Chris's hands just a little bit more. And I remember early in the season thinking that Melbourne was a little bit heavy on the early offense. The ball seemed to be stuck with Illy, seemed to be stuck with Daly, and that the guys who maybe need touches aren't getting the touches. And, if we go long periods and that's happening, then it's hard for some guys to get back in that groove. So, I just feel like that ball's got to pop a little bit more for Melbourne United.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so game three, we talked about the last minute, but it was an incredible game the entire night, but I think the entire game changed once Scott Roth decided to go to the small ball lineup. So we had Majuk Deng in that five spot for the entire last quarter after Marcus Lee hurt his knee, and he didn't go back to Will Magnay, and it proved an absolute masterstroke on two ends, because Majuk Deng came up huge and he had 15 points in the fourth quarter alone. But then, to me, the game turned to Tasmania's favour once Dean Vickerman decided to follow suit and went small ball as well. And they looked a completely unsettled team in a lot of ways without either Joe Lualua-Chul or Ariel Hutporty out on the court, when they've built so much of their team around those guys. What did you make of Scott Roth's decision to go small ball and Dean Vickerman then following suit?
Yeah, at the time I wasn't sure Magnay was injured, because I thought, you know, that absolutely would be, you know, Majuk started the fourth quarter at the four spot, and they went with Chris Livich. And they run that pin down or the turnout action there for Majuk Deng to start the quarter. He drains a three, then they switch the roles and they run one for Fabian Krstulovic, and he missed a three. And then they went to Majuk Deng at the five from then on. I think the win certainly went to Scott Roth with a small ball, and for a number of reasons. Firstly, obviously, the performance of Majuk Deng and him putting the ball in a hole. Now, Majuk, and I think I'd be kind in saying this, might be challenged a little bit at the defensive end. And Melbourne took him on a few times and missed. It easily could have been, okay, if they make buckets there, this is going to really cost Tassie. But and even Daly, you know, scored a couple of times against him in those switches and mismatches down the stretch. But you know, if Melbourne get over the line, then maybe we say they draw even in that small ball matchup. But, you know, we can only judge it on the end result. But then, you know, besides making those shots, they created that element of confusion when Travers was at the five defending. They weren't sure if they were switching or showing on the on balls. Left Majuk Deng open on one. Left Crawford to drive the lane and get himself a couple of layups. One pull-up jumper for Crawford. There was clearly, with that small ball lineup, Melbourne weren't comfortable. And, you know, even to the point where, you know, there was a bit of isolation. JLA, I think, was at one stage guarding Milton Doyle on a switch. Obviously, this wasn't the pure small ball one, but Milton got a contested mid-range jumper, and I think it was tipped in. I might be getting this wrong, but it was tipped in by Majuk Deng because of the switch. So, yeah, there was plays there. There was another one also where there was a switch at the other end. Now, this one, I'm pretty certain I'm going to get this one right, where Majuk Deng ends up on Ian Clark in an isolation, and Ian doesn't score. They run the other way, and Ian's matched up against Majuk Deng. He ends up getting an offensive rebound, tip in, and, you know, it's just clearly giving up way too much height. So those mismatches, the switches, there was a lot going on for both teams. I think at times Melbourne looked like, okay, they've won in those switches as well, but then there was times where their pick-and-roll defense was completely at sea because of the lack of role clarification or exactly what those players were trying to achieve. Which Tassie thrived upon. So, yeah, at the end, the credit goes to Scott Roth. His team won. They won on the back of it. Majuk Deng, whilst, yes, he can be challenged defensively, he wasn't exposed too much. And certainly the credits were in his favour from an offensive standpoint. And, look, another one I want to bring up as well, and it's not really conducive to this down the stretch game, but Melbourne have been really aggressive in trying to get isolations against Jack McRae. Again, another bloke who's challenged at that end at times, but I think he's held up tremendously. And there were some plays in this game where he was isolated, once against Ian Clark, where he was able to move his feet and cut him off. And there's been some others where he's just been able to compete, and this happened in game two. They were really aggressive against him. I can't remember what Luke Travers shot from the floor, but I know he was trying to take him off the dribble at times and was inefficient. Chris tried to take him off the dribble at times. Daly was trying to take him. He's had everyone going at him, but he's been able to hold up enough, just enough, to give Tassie the advantage so far.
You make a good point. In that game two, Travers went 1 of 7.
Yeah. So, and the one that he got, and again, I'm trying to go back to his memory. It was similar to a basket he had in most recent game, where there's a drag screen, and when McVay's stuck in the nail, helping on off the ball, and there's a quick ball reversal, Travers is just too quick. He's just too quick off the bounce for McVay to recover. And when they can get their spacing right, Melbourne, and they make that quick ball reversal, Travers has shown to be just a little bit too athletic. But they haven't been able to take advantage of it often enough for it to damage McVay. So, yeah, hats off to McVay and the efforts he's putting in at that end. Again, he's not very blessed with quickness and lateral speed, but he's putting in everything he can into it, and it hasn't been a problem, per se, for the Jackies to this point.
No. Last thing about the small ball. In hindsight, will Dean Vickerman feel like he did the right thing by matching the small ball, or would have he preferred to find a way to keep either JLA or Huck Porty out there to try to expose Tasmania up the other end?
Yeah, it was an interesting one. He was very quick to hook JLA when he had that one closeout on Majuk Deng in that corner. He drove, got a bump, a little bit of a mid-range fadeaway and one, and that was it. Yeah. I thought just prior to that, JLA had some good post-ups. They were sending the double. He found Dally on a roll to the basket. Dally threw it away. I had one where JLA had a deep post against Majuk Deng and just put him in the basket. I thought they had an advantage at that end. And I don't think JLA is going to give up too much of a disadvantage if he's really locked in, controlling Majuk Deng at the other end. And it ended up being, you know, the other guys had troubles with him as well. So I think Dean will reassess that one. And even the frustration with JLA of coming in and out, in and out, in and out in that last quarter, I think they've got to get his head right, because his body language to me doesn't look great. You know, he's not marching past the coach, giving him a five, talking to his teammates. He's marching straight to the end of the bench. And his head's down, and he looks frustrated to me. So they need JLA firing if they want to take full advantage of their roster. And so, yeah, I think Dean would have that moment back. I think he would have maybe persevered with JLA at the five spot.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you would agree that Jack McVay would be probably leading MVP voting for this series right now, but Shaley wouldn't be far behind either. His numbers are good, but it's not about numbers with Shay for the influence that he has on games. Look at the fact that across three games, Melbourne, they've only won one of these three games, but they're plus 37 with Shay out on the court. He's made big offensive plays. He's been aggressive offensively, but, you know, his defense that he's played on, pretty much switching between Milton Doyle and Jordan Crawford at times, has been outstanding. What have you made of Shay Illy's three games so far?
Well, renowned how much better a team Melbourne are with him on the floor. You know, he's had some good scoring games as well. I would like to see perhaps the ball get out of his hand. I'd like to see him creating for others a little bit more. It's not his point. Like, he's not a natural point guard. Like, he throws a good lob pass and pick and rolls, but like, he's not. Yeah, he doesn't have the dexterity of the great point guards, but defensively he's as elite as they come. And, you know, he takes whoever he's playing on out of the game, and obviously he's got all those other intangibles at the defensive end as well. You know, he makes those plays like the steal on Marcus Lee early in the game. You know, it's just there's only one other bloke that I know of who used to do that consistently, and he votes for the defensive player of the year on our program. So he's not quite at that realm, but geez, he's not far off. You know, he's only got the one defense player of the year. He really is in that mold. He does control the game from the defensive end. I think I've mentioned this before. He reminds me of Deion Sanders in the NFL. You know, when he's out in the field, you basically just shut down half the side of the field. You don't want to put the ball anywhere near him. And Shay's similar in the sense that he can really blow up every DHO, top lock guys out of the game. Like, he's just such an effective weapon. And, even the foul he drew on Crawford, which I thought was a bad call, I thought it was extremely soft, but not coincidentally right in front of the Melbourne bench, where he's just, you know, Jordan put two hands in his chest, a little nudge, but we see it, you know, 1,000 times a game, but he was able to extract the whistle on his movement on that one. He just makes plays constantly, and he's been exceptional in this series, and they miss him when he's not out there.
Yes, yeah, and I thought that was a difference in game two. He was the only one keeping them in with a chance late in that game, but once he fouled out, I felt like Melbourne's chances went with him too.
Yeah, he was. He was really aggressive down the stretch. And I thought there was a couple of, I know he shot the ball pretty well to the field, but I thought there was a possession or two where maybe that should have, that was a little bit rushed, but then obviously when I was struggling to score, he did score in transition. So it's a balancing act, but Melbourne need to get the ball in the hands of JLA. They need Chris with more touches, and I think that's when they're at their best. And right now, the ball's in Shea and Dele's hands a lot. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But he's been excellent in this series.
That gets on to my next point. I want to get your thoughts on Matthew Dellavedova, because is he – I mean, you can't fault his effort. I mean, clearly this means a lot to him and he's giving his all, but is he trying to do too much? Is he trying to take too much on and not getting, like you said, his teammates as involved as well as he perhaps could be?
Well, I think he's probably doing this. I think there seems to be, and just listening to Shea in the interview during the game, he was being, you know, Dean had been encouraging to be aggressive.
Mm.
I think when there's switches, that they're letting the point guards or the guards or any mismatch sort of really cut off the offense and go at the mismatches. So maybe it's not so much the players, maybe the team just needs to reevaluate, okay, what is it that we want to get out of our half-court sets? Who do we want touching it? How do we want to present ourselves at that end? And what's the balance that we're happy to strike? Again, you know, Melbourne were a possession away from where we got through and being in a position to close this out themselves. So we're really sort of picking pretty heavily to find fault in these players. But at the same time, you want to be at your absolute peak performance in this one. And I think that ball popping a little bit more and Chris finding a few more shots and let Dele and Shea, you know, let them go in the half court, or sorry, in the early transition. But maybe in the half court, we look to move that ball a little bit more and try and find some other targets as well.
Even Ian Clark as well, I feel like he's been a little bit underutilised so far, especially just not getting as many looks as perhaps he could as well. So maybe he and Chris both, they can find ways of getting them some more shots.
Well, it's a quandary, isn't it? I thought Ian had some good looks in game three early. You know, he was 3 of 11 from the field. He missed a couple of ones that you consider dollies. There was two back-to-back threes. One was on a, and this is where the Jack McVay thing comes in. Chris had isolation versus Jack McVay.
Yep.
Blows by him like he's a traffic cone. And then the help defense comes in. He kicks out to Ian Clark and he misses a three.
Yep.
I think the possession before that, he may have missed a wide open three as well. And that might be on the steal on the inbounds. I can't remember. But I know that he missed back-to-back threes and you're looking at Ian Clark and saying, oh, geez, Tassie have dodged bullets. And they did dodge a few. And Melbourne have just got to put the lid on those ones and then they wouldn't find themselves in the position they did find themselves in down the stretch there.
Jordan Crawford's a fascinating one as well. I mean, he had a really, really strong regular season. He deserved to be in consideration for one of the All-NBL teams. He was a great scorer, but he then hit a brick wall in the last two games against the Wildcats, and then in game one of this series, he only had 7 points, went 3 of 13. But then he came out, he had 13 points 6 minutes into game two, and then like you touched on earlier, virtually didn't play again for the rest of the night. He only took two more shots for the entire rest of the game, so the last 34 minutes, and we virtually didn't see him in the second half. And then comes out 14 points in game three, and he had his moments as well. It's been a hell of a roller coaster ride over the last five games for him. What do you make of it?
Yeah, look, it has. I've got nothing but admiration for the way he's gone about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I thought he was on the back end of some horrific calls by the referees in game three.
Mm.
The foul off the ball on Dele. Where Dele threw himself back, just a horrible whistle. There was a succession of horrible whistles, I thought, in the first quarter, and he was the recipient of two of them.
Yeah,
that was a bad whistle. Referees blowing toward a reaction rather than what they see, which is crime punishable by being dropped, in my opinion, but it's not going to happen. And then we saw an incredibly soft call in the post, the next possession down. And so he's got two fouls in the first quarter and now, you know, Coach Roth has got a juggling act to go around. Then we saw that soft push off again. Yeah, it was there. But geez, you better be consistent with that call and not just call it when Dean's yelling in your ear for it.
Yep.
Yeah, look, I thought he was on the back end of some tough decisions there. But during that fourth quarter when Melbourne were throwing some different lineups out of there, and he's running, you know, they've got some double drags going for him. A little bit of confusion from Melbourne United as to how they wanted to cover that, whether they were switching or showing, or he took full advantage of it and created some great plays for them. I thought the mental toughness on show from him was excellent. I thought in game two, the mental toughness for him to come out and they were doubling off him onto Jack McVay and letting him open in those perimeter shots.
Mm-hmm.
and you know, the fortitude for him to step up to the plate in a big game, knock them down, get Tassie on the right pathway. Huge. So he's played his role. A little bit of luck goes his way with regards to the whistle, and maybe we see even a better performance.
Speaking of the whistle, I mean, we've seen a lot of flopping in this series, a lot of feigning for calls, a lot of playing for calls, and a lot of strange whistles. But those two calls for flopping on Will Magne or a warning, and then the flopping call on Will Magne, I mean, they didn't look like flops to me. I mean, he got a lot of contact on both those plays. They were two strange whistles as well. And, I mean, we haven't seen the best of Will Magne as a result of the whistle this whole series.
Okay, I need to find a nice way to say this. I have no sympathy for Will Magne right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's my pre-series pick for MVP, so I think that says a lot about the respect I have for Will Magne. But his flopping and flailing has been exposed, and now he's not getting the benefit of the doubt. Now, I think some might say that Chris was pushed out of bounds on that last play, not giving him the whistle.
Yep.
I have no sympathy for these people who are playing for the whistle right now, and we're seeing it. You know, Dally's wanting a review on everything. Dally, I've got no sympathy for you. I've got none for you. You're flopping, you're flailing, you're trying to get the whistle. Drimmick does the same, has done most of his career. Look, there's guys who are trying to play for whistles. And when you don't get them, I've got nothing but, you know, bad luck, mate.
Mm-hmm.
Play harder. Those ones that involve Magne, I thought he overplayed the one in the chest that Dally had, the shoulder through the chest. Yes, there was contact. Is that sending the 6'10", 235-pound bloke to the floor like it did? Dally's pretty strong, but no, he shouldn't have had that result. I'm okay with that. That was, I think, the tech foul.
Yep.
The first one, JLA putting a shoulder on him through the chest plate. Again, he folded over. I've got no problem with it. Yeah, I'm okay. You caught one in the chest, you don't fold forward, you go backwards. Yeah, I've got no problems with those calls, but that's mainly because I feel like Will's been trying to extract calls. When we talk about Will's performance so far in this series, I actually rate it a lot higher than other people might.
Yep.
I thought that he's played some really pivotal moments and possessions with his rim protection. And sometimes it's just a straight-up intimidation that he brings around the rim. Now, both teams in the pick-and-roll have clearly said that we are going to give up floaters. We're going to guard the roller first. And so they're taking away a lot of action for the bigs on the pick-and-rolls. So he's been strangled a little bit in those plays, which he's very, very good at.
Mm.
So, yes, he's been taken a little bit out of there. So the opportunity to score hasn't been there quite as much. And you're seeing Sean McDonald getting a whole bunch of runners. You're seeing Crawford get a whole bunch of runners.
Yep.
As on the opposite end, you're also seeing Dally and Shaili and Clark getting a lot of runners. So the both teams have said, we're taking away the roller and we're going to live with the runners and the shots at the rim by the guards, and hopefully we can get some extra help there. So I think from that standpoint, we're seeing a bit of a drop in production. But I thought he's played really well at times with regards to that rim protection. I love to see that from him. He's incredibly brave all the way he chases down the ball at times. And for a guy who's had a history of injuries, he certainly goes after it. I just hope that he starts to hold his ground a little bit more and doesn't feel the need to sort of try and accentuate contact. Again, there was a bit of a contact on both those plays. But I'm okay with those flop calls because I feel like there's maybe a couple that they've missed.
Yep, I think you summed it up well. Nothing more I can add. So that's, I think we've done a great job dissecting all of that as well, Simon. So thanks for putting your thinking cap on for all of that. Let's take our last break, and then when we come back, we'll wrap things up.
Can you picture the first goal before the ball has even bounced? Can you read the footy future in the mullet of a full forward? You've got the touch. Got the touch? Download the Tab Touch app today.
You win some, you lose more.
Okay, back on Hoop 7's Basketball Hustle. I'm here with Simon Mitchell once again this week. And Simon, our voting is in on your Galen Award. So each week during the NBL season, you picked out who you thought was the best team man from each NBL round. And we ended up narrowing it down at the end of the season to your three nominees. So for anyone that's trying to catch up, I named this award in honour of Galen Young, who is no longer with us, but I just felt he was that ultimate team man as the Wildcats finally broke through for a 2010 championship. And that's what this award is in honour of. So you ended up narrowing it down to Will Magnay of the Jack Jumpers, Hyrum Harris of the Wildcats, Sam McDaniel of the Brisbane Bullets. We put it to our listeners to cast a vote, and you probably won't be too surprised, Simon, to learn that from those votes that we had cast, Hyrum Harris ended up getting 51% of the vote. Will Magnay came in second with 27%, Sam McDaniel 22%. Did our listeners get it right in your mind?
I reckon we could have had just about anyone from the Perth Wildcats roster nominated and that might have been the same result. But look, I don't think you could get one wrong out of those three. Mm-hmm. I think they all play pivotal roles on their team. And I think they are all unsung heroes. Now, Hyrum Harris, with his injection into the starting five and being used a little bit more, I thought turned the Wildcats season around. But one of those blokes is still playing, so I probably would have favoured him just a fraction, but I don't think you could get it wrong. I think Hyrum's story is a wonderful story of commitment to the game, commitment to getting better, and not taking no as an answer. Too slow, too small. Doesn't shoot the ball well enough. Name the thing. You can find 1,000 reasons for him not to be in our league. Mm-hmm. Well, he just won't take any of those to heart. He's like, no, I'll outwork you, I'll outplay you, and I'll find a way to beat you. And he consistently does it, and that's why I love him.
Yep, absolutely. So our friends at Sports Card World as well, Simon, which is a card shop in Adelaide, which Scotty Ninnis has had a lot to do with over the years, and going back 30 years, he even opened up his own shop in Melbourne when he was playing at the Southeast Melbourne Magic. So thanks to Scott Ninnis for this connection. But our friends at Sports Card World are giving away to the people that did vote on this award a full box of the NBL Tops trading cards. So what I've done, Simon, is I've put all of our names into a bit of a draw here. So I've got a list of them. Let me give a drum roll and we'll pick out a winner thanks to Sports Card World. There you go. You might recognise this name as well, Simon. Jordan McCullum. You can see his analysis on the NBL pop-up. And this wasn't a concocted result. This was a genuine draw. I put all the names on the list. I pick a random name, and Jordan McCullum is the name that came out. So he'll enjoy opening those packs of cards.
It would have been a very analytical vote.
Yes, it would have. I'm sure he did his study and put the numbers to it before he cast his vote. So well done to Jordan. We'll get that prize to you thanks to Sports Card World. Were you much of a trading card person, Simon?
I had the footy cards as a kid.
Yep.
I had my Kiss trading cards when they were killing it back in the 70s and early 80s.
Yep.
And then probably put the card game away after that. So not my thing. I'm not a big knick-knack kind of guy. I don't spend my money on those sorts of things.
Yep, no, probably a good idea. But if anyone else wants to get onto your cards, head to Sports Card World in Adelaide or head to their website and they'll look after you. Let's get to a preview of the rest of this championship series thanks to TabTouch, Simon. So check out the odds at tabtouch.com.au or download the TabTouch app, and Cody's come up with an exclusive, so go to the exclusive section and you'll come up with something for game four that you can put your money on as well. Well, let's get down to business, Simon. Does Tasmania wrap it up on Thursday night in Hobart in game four, or are we going back to a game five in Melbourne?
This is such a flip of the coin prediction because I could see Melbourne's bets really stepping up and playing big. Chris Golding's a big, big game player. Dally, obviously, with his experiences. I think JLA's primed for a comeback game. I think Dean's going to throw him a little bit more consistency in his minutes and let him play longer stretches. So I could see a Melbourne comeback. But I think the passion of the people of Tasmania, the players have just been so solid, and Scott Ross coaching brilliance. I'm just leaning towards the Jack Jumpers in another nail biter.
Can you think of a more amazing story if they're able to do it? I mean, you went so close to doing it as a new club with the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. I mean, you were within touching distance as well. I don't need to go back through that with you and bring up old wounds, but you almost did what they're doing. But this story of the Jack Jumpers and the way they've captured the imagination of the whole state, how amazing would it be if they can complete the job, especially on their home floor?
It will be phenomenal. And, I mean, it's absolutely the blueprint for expansion teams. I think the way they've captured the hearts of the people of Tasmania, I think the way they go about their business, I think the Scott Roth as a spokesman for the league, the emotional attachment that he clearly has for Tasmania and its people, I think it's just a it's a Cinderella story that you know, hopefully has a happy ending for them. Yeah, look, it's a Disney movie waiting to happen, really, isn't it?
It is, absolutely is. If by chance you're wrong and it goes to a game five, do you give Tasmania a chance to win again in Melbourne, or would the pendulum swing back towards Melbourne if it does end up going to a game five? Or, I mean, is it too hard to tell before we actually see game four?
Yeah, well, I don't think I'm not giving Melbourne much chance if they can't win this one. So yeah, we do need to see this game. Yeah. But I don't think, yeah, I think these two teams are so evenly matched that it's very, very difficult to predict a winner. I think we've seen Melbourne being dominant throughout the courses of games and Tassie come back and win. And it's because of the matchup, so I think it's the changes coaches are making and mistakes that players are making as well, with their communication, especially pick and roll defense. So it's really difficult because I don't see there's an outstanding or a dominant team in this just at this point. I'm leaning towards Tassie. If it goes to game five, the home teams definitely have an advantage. I think throughout history we've seen home teams clinch, you know, that you get the crowd, everybody's battle weary, and you're looking for that extra thing to pull you over the line. Now, belief in your team and your teammates and your systems and all that, yep, that might still be there, but that gets chipped away at over five games. And, you know, everybody's looking for something extra to help them over the line. We saw it in the WNBL with a dominant game three by Southside. We've seen it historically with the home team clinching on there in the decider. I go back to my time at Melbourne United and having Adelaide in game five. And, and whilst it was a close game at times, it felt like, you know, we led from go to woe, and it felt like we controlled the game in that circumstance. And I could certainly see Melbourne United doing that again, especially with, you know, the leaders like Chris Golding. But there's something about this Tassie team and a team of destiny that maybe I'm just hoping for it, but I can feel it with this group.
Yeah. All right. Let's let Thursday night in Hobart play out. So that'll be game four of this championship series. So we'll wait and see what happens there. Apart from a Melbourne United supporter, I don't think anyone in the country would be too upset to watch the Jack Jumpers clinch it. So we'll see how it plays out. But it's been a lot for us to dissect, Simon. It's been fascinating to pick your brain and get your thoughts. Hopefully everybody enjoyed listening. Thank you to Hoop 7 and Tab Touch for making it possible once more. I'm Chris Pike, and I'll sign off there and let you finish off, Simon, with whatever's on your mind.
Yeah, well, I might just go back on everything I just said. I really wish this was a seven-game series, the way it's going right now. I don't want it to end in Tassie. I want to see this continue. But, yeah, I actually came prepared for the first time. Normally when you say, you know, you get the last word, I'm like, oh, Christ, I think it was something. I want to tip the hat to Fab Krisevich for his performance in game three. There's moments where you just sort of notice, like, he's obviously not a star of the Tassie Jack Jumpers. He's got a diminished role when they've got Magne healthy and up and about. And I thought Marcus Lee was excellent early in the game. I thought his activity was far out. I thought he outworked JLA in the first 4, 5, 6 minutes of the game. But when Krisevich came into the game, he came in and hit that kick out three, and then he's got himself a layup in the pick and roll in the next possession. And you talk about guys who can impact in small moments. Like, he's played 6 minutes. He's got those back-to-back baskets, 5 points. And at the time, I took note. I was like, geez, that's a big 30 seconds from an unsung hero. And then when you see teams' ability to win on the buzzer, yep, we're going to focus on that. We're going to focus on the turnover, on the inbound. But I'm going to go back to that 5 points in 30 seconds, 6 minutes of brilliance, plus seven, Fab Krisevich. I thought those are the guys, when you come in and produce like that in minimal reps, those are the things that can win you championships. So I just wanted to tip my hat for him in his unsung hero role in Game 3.
Can you picture the first goal before the ball's even bounced? You might have the touch. When the weather's wet, can you feel who'll triumph? You've got the power. Can you read the footy future in the mullet of a full forward? Then you too might be harnessing the power of the touch. Got the touch? Download the Tab Touch app today.
You win some, you lose more. For free and confidential support, call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.